As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Rates and Barrels, it's Thursday, April 25th. Derek Mariah, Barino Saris, Trevor May here with you on this Thursday. A little schedule flip, which is actually super relevant to one of the main topics today. We're going to talk about building an elite bullpen, and flexibility might be the key in that. So we've got Trevor working the eighth with us today instead of closing us out at the end of the week in the ninth. I don't know. Terrible analogy, but I'm using it anyway. It's cheesy. It's lame. It's fine. A lot of bullpen talk today, but we got a couple news items to get to first, and I wanted to start with Jordan Walker. He's been demoted to AAA in April in each of his first two big league seasons. Last year was because of defense. He was learning a new position. You could see the struggles. It was easy to just watch and go, okay, yeah, he's not comfortable out there yet. He actually was hitting okay, I think, his first month last year when he got demoted, and they had a logjam in the outfield. This year, it's more of a specific struggle. Like, his swing mechanics are a little out of whack. They're saying he's struggling with down and away pitches. And I just want this to make sense, because some of the guys they're playing ahead of Jordan Walker are not the long-term solutions, but sometimes you have to do that as an organization. So, Trevor, I want to ask you this. Like, how much does it matter, like, the specific problem, and how much does it matter the type of player and their mindset when you use a demotion like this to try and get things right? Because in my head, getting sent down when you should be a fixture in a lineup would be a potentially confidence-shattering sort of event, right? To sort of deal with the, hey, I'm not on the big league roster anymore. Like, that would have a different effect on different people. So does this seem like the right situation with Walker? And how do you feel about the get your confidence back, get right mechanically demotions that we see from time to time?
Yeah, I think we see like the confidence shattering thing happen fairly often, where guys are highly touted prospects, they come up, things don't go quite as, you know, as planned, and then something seeps in where maybe it's someone who hasn't struggled a lot up until that point. That I think that's pretty common. Then they go down and they do well again, and then they have to wait a little bit for their promotion, and so there becomes a little bit of jadedness happens. A guy that's like pops in my mind is Kelnick. I feel like there's a lot of that happening where it took a little bit longer. I know the Orioles right now are thinking about like how it might affect probably Holiday if that were to happen to him, just because he has struggled mightily here at the beginning. And you have to weigh those things with the guy like Jordan Walker for it to be the second one too. I know that that's seeping in his mind. Like, that doubt that he maybe has never had is probably more present than it ever has. Like, am I actually good enough to stay? Is that what I'm being told? Was I just wrong? And that's really hard to do, especially on your own. Because at the end of the day, when you go down to AAA, like, everyone there wants to be in the big leagues too. Like, you're not going to get any sympathy. Like, it's the worst thing ever when you come down and you're salty because you're down. And then the guy's like, hey, we've all been here, man. Like, you got to get over it fast. So you only get a couple days of that. Yeah, you can't be entitled, or you can't feel like you're even if everyone thinks they're better. You're like, we're better than this league. Like, I deserve to be in the big leagues. Everyone feels that way. It's universal, and it's kind of got to go unsaid, because you're not going to get guys to be like, yeah, man, you definitely should be there. You know, like, they feel the same way. It's just, that's only going to take you so far. So, but I've seen it a lot. I've seen guys come down and like dwell on it a little bit too long. And at the end of the day, you do have to go down and just show that you're making progress. Now, when it comes down to like getting good at or getting better at something specific, like they said about Jackson Holliday, he needs to hit lefties. Like, that's just kind of lip service when they sent him down at the beginning or at the in spring.
Yeah, because where are there better lefties, you know?
Exactly.
Like, where are like, the better lefties?
A lot of it's just an excuse. It's just something to say. And that, you know, I don't know. He's just struggling. And that might have been like he's not hitting this pitch well, but like he's just not playing that well generally. And this is a plausible reason to send him. As for going down, like having a plan, there's not very many organizations that are really good at that communication. Like, hey, we're putting you in positions to work on this. And the work you're doing in the cage is to work on this. And you go down and you kind of become part of the team pretty quickly. And
you're just working with a different hitting coach.
Yeah. You're not going to get special treatment. Some guys do. There's some exceptions. But for the most part, it's very easy to go down and then you're just in AAA now. And you can get comfortable there. And so it's going to be on him to take that stuff to heart and then find his best way to do his work every day while he's trying to perform, while at the same time improving in the ways that he's been told that he needs to improve. It's really hard to do. It's a balance, but hopefully the confidence shattering doesn't take away from the ability to like be motivated to do that work. And sometimes it does.
I'm not suggesting this is necessarily the case with Jordan Walker, but you did bring up Kelenic, and there was some talk about this being the problem. A problem with Kelenic was listening to team coaches. Yeah, I've written a little bit about this year about just how many voices are in a player's head and how many of their own coaches they have. And so I know with Kelenic, like once he was set down, there was this big story about, oh yes. And then he came and met with the coaches and we met with his private coach and we all met together and we made a plan together. And this plan produced this great April when Kelenic came back, remember? And it was kind of, the implication was he finally listened. So I do wonder if sometimes these things are like, you're not listening, you know, like it doesn't seem like you're trying to do the things we want you to do. So we're kind of trying to reach out to you to like, you let you know, like you need to listen, you need to improve in these ways or else, you know, we don't think that you can be in the big league. So have you ever seen that happen where like, they're like, it's just somebody that's like working with Teacher Man and like Teacher Man says this and you know, the team is like, God, you're just like, can you stop just doing the Teacher Man thing? We're just trying to teach you this other thing. And then they send him down. And then like the player's like, well, my time in the big leagues is at stake here. I guess I should listen to them. Or I don't know. Did that ring any bells? Something like that?
There is a very fine line between being coachable and being a happy soldier yes man. There's right. A very, very fine line. And it's hard to tell even, like, it's hard to tell when you're the guy if you're not quite sure what you're, you know, if you're not, you don't have the experience yet to know who you are as a big league player yet. So like, that's a very sticky situation. That's where good coaching and good, like open-minded, like you latch on to a guy's excitement to learn something or like what he's excited about. Like he comes to you something like, hey, I want to try this thing. There's a way to do that right. And there's a way to like, be like, well, that's not the way we do things. And shut it down. That guy's going to get jaded. That guy's going to get a little more stubborn because he believes that's best for his career. And you have to give him a good reason not to. So like, there is some of that. I run into a lot of coaches that like, this is the way we do it. This is our way.
The Cardinals way. We've heard that before.
I've talked to guys that have played in a lot of places and they just were not fans of how micromanaged they got to, especially like veterans. We're like, dude, like it's just not the way that I am. I go for, my intent is to do things that maybe they don't do historically. And they tried to kind of mold me into that model. And we butt heads a little bit. Like, honestly, like even the Schilt leaving was a little bit of a weird situation, right? Because he had a different ideas and they didn't want to hear it.
Which is weird because he loved the Cardinal way and he came up through that organization and
yeah, really
he
weird.
Was part of making the Cardinal way. And then they were like, no, you're not doing enough analytics or whatever it was.
Or like maybe he was suggesting things that they were just like really opposed to. And that's just the last straw. So I don't know though. I don't know. I haven't heard a lot about Jordan as a person either, or, you know, I haven't heard anything about him not being a good, easily coachable. So there's a lot of that. And sometimes an organization just feels like you're not doing their way and they kind of just like are out. You're sometimes getting a blank slate somewhere else.
I think that's when you end up trading like a Randy Rosarena.
Yes, exactly.
You're like, Randy, we've been trying to tell you to get the ball in the air forever and you just can't do it. So see ya, going to Tampa. And Tampa's like,
hey, you know what? You hit the ball hard. You're really speedy.
Do what you do.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, that's a very Rays thing. That's why guys go to the Rays a lot and are successful.
And one thing I've heard about Rays player development is not that they are so great in that they fiddle all the dials and they're like, oh, do this. In fact, what I've heard about the Rays player development is they're good because they're just like, you know, like, we think these are the things you do well. We'll tell you to do maybe to do those things more, but like, we're just gonna let you be, man. We got you for a reason. There might be some little stuff around the sides, but like, we're not gonna be like, we need to change your arm slot. You know?
Yeah, so, yeah. It's very much like, if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. Kind of like vibe. Like it's just not there. It's just not super emotional thing. Like, we're gonna give you all the tools, and you know, if the performance just doesn't pan out the way we thought, hopefully you can get another.
Or if you're good in some other way we didn't expect, like,
yeah,
you know,
we might miss it, but we're gonna do our best. And then and what do you think? And then it's collaborative. I've heard Dodgers same thing. Like, they just have people who are like just generally curious about different information. Those are the people I gravitated towards too. Like, when a guy was just curious about like trying new things, coach or player, those were the people that I was talking to all the time. That's why I love sitting in the analytics room, because that's what they were doing. They were literally every year, they were just trying new ways of presenting the data. So that's their job. So like, having those conversations, that was like a great place to do it. So it's nuanced in a lot of ways, but yeah, I mean, it's tough.
Speaking of data here on Jordan Walker, I think my approach would be to put him in the lineup every day, near the bottom of the lineup, and leave him alone. Because, and this is my evidence for it, Jordan Walker has hit a ball 113 and has an 11.9% barrel rate so far this year. His strikeout rate's a little bit worse than average, but his swing strike rate's about the same as last year. His walk rate's about average. But if you focus on the batted ball quality, other players that have hit the ball near 113 and hit barrels like sort of 10 to 11% of the time include Ryan Mountcastle, MJ Melendez, William Contreras, Christian Walker, Christian Encarnacion Strand, Pete Alonso, Ian Happ. I mean, I didn't go to the upper ends, you know, past the Ian Happ has hit a ball 114. So I kept it between 112.8 and 114. So those are comps. Those are good comps. Those are good comps. I know Melendez is not quite taken off, but like, if I had, I mean, what are the Royals doing with Melendez? Playing him. You know, that's what I would do with Jordan Walker. I'd play him. I just play him and be like, like, it's not going to be Jordan Walker that takes us out of this. It's going to be Nolan Arenado and Paul Goldschmidt refining what they normally do. They're the guys that like that are going to make us go. And then if we really get going, it's Jordan Walker's doing it too. And the only way to really get going is be like, Jordan, just keep on doing it.
Then they have the luxury to do it. I mean, it's not like they're running away with the division or something. Like, they're like, we need to keep production or someone's gonna catch us. They like, I just feel like that's a little bit of Cardinals thing. It's like, we have to do stuff like this to show that we're, you know,
yeah, we're tweaking the dials. We're doing something.
We're tweaking the dials. Like, we're mixing it up. And that's very old school. I think that there's more teams that are like, I feel like the Yankees struggled with that for a long time, and now they're finally committing to like, this is how we're gonna be better. Like, and we're gonna play
Anthony Volpe all year, despite there being obvious, you know, some concerns with the bat. You know, and now Anthony Volpe's like great. And part of that was they just played him all year.
And he felt like he was going to play. Like, it's like, am I going to get this opportunity? And then it takes a lot of pressure off. Yeah, like you just mentioned, like, all the peripherals are like, he's fine. He's like four balls dropping, and then the season looks completely different. Like, it's April. Like, so is it worth possibly sacrificing a guy's confidence? I don't think so, especially when you're not like running away with the division. So just let the guy play if he's factored in. Now, that's one thing. Maybe that plan's changing in their mind. Maybe they're getting a little bit, take a step back. Like, this isn't panning out. And that happens. Like, it's one day someone in charge goes, I'm not huge on that guy anymore. And then that's all she wrote.
And I understand also from the fans' perspective, they're watching this every day. And so they're saying, oh, he doesn't look good in his at-bats. The confidence is gone. But I think that is also a portion of, they're not actually playing him. Like, what I'm saying is, play him every day. They're not doing that, you know? And so he saw the writing on the wall. You know, Ollie Marmol's taking him out of games late.
So he sees it coming, yeah, which is not helping. If I don't hit now, I'm going to get sent down. And you get sent down. That's what happens.
I keep looking at this team and thinking, you know, they are a tinkering organization. Ollie Marmol is like the next big tinkering thing they're going to do. They're going to replace him. Like, it's not a place where you can be in last place for a long time and get away with it, right? They finished last season. They're in last place, I think, entering play on Thursday.
I think Mozeliak's lost his fastball, man. I think the big tinker needs to happen.
Well, yeah, I think that would be the right adjustment, too. I think Chaim Bloom is better than John Mozeliak, and they have that opportunity if they make that change to promote Chaim and move on.
I mean, what have we seen from Mozeliak? He's said publicly, we didn't focus on swing and miss enough. Our pitching development program is not modernized enough. So that, okay, so that's half of your job. And now the hitting side is totally falling apart. So it's like, well, what are you doing right? I think they do have good scouts. They consistently produce interesting young athletic players. So that, I think their scouting system is pretty good, but you know, the other stuff is not looking good right now.
No, frustrating times in St. Louis. One other thing I wanted to talk to both of you about was just tracking workloads, because what we're seeing from the Pirates with Paul Skeens is a plan, and they're slowly ramping him up. Last time out, that was just yesterday against AAA Omaha, 4 1/3 innings, his longest outing of the season. You think about the way Paul Skeens was used last season, his final college season, and how he's being brought along this year. Trevor, if an organization came to you with a plan like what the Pirates are doing with Paul Skeens, would you be on board with that in the year 2024? Managing innings this way, managing workloads this way, as opposed to managing it some other way? Like, how would you respond to that, or how would you plan it if you were in the pitching director position and you had someone like Skeens that you were trying to get onto the big league roster?
It's a very interesting question because, you know, it's all about avoiding injuries. These guys don't, like, they're going from, especially guys who are like first overall picks, they're going to be in the big leagues like within a year. They're going from a 60-game season to a 162-game season. I understand that the workload difference is more than double most of the time, which is a big, like, you're not going to get 180 innings out of a guy right out of college. I mean, you might, but that probably won't pay off the next year after that and the year after that. Like, that's when that gets a toll. You can get ahead of yourself. And so there is some of that that needs to happen. One thing that I struggle with and that is bothering me, I think that we haven't seen it come to fruition quite yet, but we will when the older guard, the Verlanders and the Max Scherzers and those guys are kind of not playing anymore, is that you're just like, you're training these guys. They're not doing what their job is. Like, they're just pitching. They're just like eating up a couple innings. And then, so they're just like, they're doing, it's almost like you're training for a marathon, but you're never actually running one. As a reliever too, like, you have that guy, it takes a toll on you. You're like, okay, he's only going to throw 4 or he's only going to throw 5, and you're never going to get that big game. And they never learn how to become that big game guy. So like, once you, if it's been 3 years since a guy's thrown 7 innings, like, it's now foreign to him. You're not going to, the guy takes over and throws a 9-inning game just like, you got to pry the ball out of my cold, dead fingers. So I want to make sure that's there too. I would much rather them do longer bodies of work when they're pitching and then like have an extra day of rest than vice versa. I would much rather do that. I would try to do that if possible. But the problem with that is, and the reason that we don't go to like a 6-man, like, if they don't just say, we have 27-man rosters now and you get one starting pitcher. And I think we talked about this last week when we were getting ready for the show. Yeah, like, maybe make one of them have to be a 0-3 guy, right? So like the money, they're like, well, we're paying one extra pitcher, big league money. Like, that's going to be the problem. That's going to be the sticking point. And then it's going to affect innings and production and of all the other starters. So like, free agency markets will have to adjust, and they don't want to do that. Like, it's just, you're starting to affect money. When that happens, that's usually when things just grind to a halt. But I do think long term, in terms of quality of pitching and development, that's the better option.
You like the 6-man rotation?
I would much rather a guy throw 7 innings once a week than throw maybe twice, 3 innings both times, not really learning how to, like, he doesn't have to work through adversity. He doesn't have to work through that long inning because he knows he's going to be done after it or whatever. Like it just, it's a different mental development you're getting. And we're seeing that more and more and more, especially with the high picks. It's like, they're supposed to come up and be studs, and like, you want them to throw 200 innings eventually, but we're going to treat them like they're on a spring training schedule for the first year of their career. I understand you want them at the end of the year, but like, that's just, maybe that's just not feasible. And you should just like not be like, we're just not going to have him for the playoffs. We're in the playoffs. He's just not going to be that guy. He's just not, but he is going to be the guy who gets us there. Maybe that's enough for the first year. And I feel like everyone's trying to get their cake and eat it too. And I think you just need to pick one.
I guess so. I, you know, like, given this state of, of baseball and these rosters and what's going on, I think what they're just basically trying to do is mimic the major league schedule. So, like, you know, they're not going to put him on extra days of rest if he's not going to get extra days when he gets to the big leagues. So get him on that extra schedule and basically treat this like an extended spring training. Like, they're just trying to be like, you're going to be like, instead of going 3-4 and you're ready for the big leagues or whatever, it's going to be like 1-2-3-4-5
3,
you know?
3-3-3-4
Yeah, or 3-3-3-3-3-4-5 I do think they're going to get to 5. I don't think he's going to be a guy that necessarily goes long, especially if he's a 100-mile-an-hour guy. I think he might be, you know, closer to 5 and dive, especially since they're going to be managing those. But what's interesting to me is that, like, the science of this is a little bit beyond the actual implementation. So we know a little bit about acute to chronic ratio, which is basically that, like, acute stress is the game day. Acute is, you know, you're throwing 100, you're doing your 5 innings, whatever. That's acute. In order to get to acute ability, you need to up your chronic ability. And so that's like, you know, I can run a half marathon this weekend because I just ran 8.5 miles yesterday and at a certain tempo. And I know that 13 miles is in me. But I couldn't, if I was up to like 5 miles, I wouldn't want to run the 13. You know what I mean? I have to develop a chronic ability, a sort of everyday ability to be able to hit those heights. You don't ever want, like, it would be terrible if I wasn't running at all and then just woke up on Sunday and was like, let's go run the freaking half marathon. So that's the acute to chronic ratio. So we have that sussed out to some level. And that's part of, like, pulse and these sort of tracking things. There is one major league pitcher. There is actually a monitor that you can put on your elbow that's been approved to wear in the major leagues. There's one major league pitcher wearing it. His name is Nick Martinez. And he's wearing the pulse thing while he pitches.
There's
and that
two.
Can give... Huh? There's two?
Joe Boyle wears it, too. Oh, there's the... We got him.
Yeah, we got two.
But Joe Boyle, the A's, also wears it. Yeah.
All right. So what that's telling Joe Boyle and what's telling Nick Martinez is your acute level of stress. And so then you can throw that into something and know how much to rest, because you want to acute is like the big fatigue thing. And then you need to come off that, but you need to build up the chronic. You can't just stop pitching for a week because you hit an acute. So, like, there's this, like, sort of relationship, and it would be better if every single pitcher wore the pulse monitor. I'm sure of it. It doesn't have to be pulse branded. There's different ones. My guy Casey Mulholland at Connect Pro has one. Like, whatever it is, wear something that does actually measures the direct stress, because Paul Skeens is throwing 100. Like, his acute stress is probably worse than others. So maybe it would be better to have him on the 6th day.
Yeah. It might be. Everyone, like, 100, how guys get to 100, some guys have a lot more effort than others.
Easy.
It does,
yeah.
But like that, we know that means nothing. Because, you know, like Aaron Sanchez, he was easy, but he kept getting hurt, right? So that's who knows what that, or Trinan, same thing. Like, so, yeah, I think you're right there. I think it would be great to see that kind of stuff. I actually wore it for, like, the last – at least I was in playing catch, not in the game. I had enough things on my body during the game. So I was like – but I wanted to know, like, how long toss was affecting me in terms of chronic, and because I had to pitch every day. And so that was really interesting too, because my chronic was slowly building up, but I was building my arm strength and building my, I guess, resistance to injury while I was playing catch that day, and I made that – part of my deal. I think there is something there, and I think that maybe we shy away from that a little bit. Starters definitely do. There's a lot of starters that, like, never go beyond 90 feet because it's all about just resting between your starts. And I think we've learned a lot more. Yeah, exactly. We learn a lot more about what they're able to, how much they're able to go on the step on the foot on the gas, and maybe start to build those innings. Even if they're not cataloged innings in games, they're still building more ability to handle chronic stress over time, so that maybe that goes a little bit faster, and that would give us a way to, you know, track it.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Tracking that chronic seems really hard to do. Because you
Unless
have to get the
like
buy-in.
The thing all the
yeah,
time.
Have to, yeah. Players have to wear that stuff all the time. Is it just like a Fitbit that goes up higher on your arm?
Kind of, and it's got to be placed perfectly, yeah. Like every time, and flipped the right way. And it's an exact science in a lot of ways.
Oh, it's Sometimes not as easy muddy, as just muddy putting an Apple Watch on or a Fitbit.
I mean,
it's not
it
easy.
Kind of is. It's just like where it, you got to put it up here on your forearm. So it's like not as. Like you can put it down or up, and because once your ligaments in there too, like how they're flexing, and if you miss them, then it's getting weird. Like for example, like the arm angle reading it gives you is just kind of a little bit of a crapshoot. Like it's hard; you can't really do anything with it because it's sometimes just way off. I think that in terms of like revolutions, like how fast your arm's moving and stuff, the accelerometer in it is really good. So that's the one thing it does really well, which is the acute. That's how they get the acute versus chronic stress.
That's the missing thing. It's like being able to count all of the workload. It's just incomplete information. That's what makes this job so difficult. Yeah, it's getting better. But how uncomfortable is it having that extra monitor on your arm? Like that just seems like it would take a little bit of getting used to, especially to throw at game speed. Like you were playing catch with it, but pitching in a game, yeah, like wouldn't you just be thinking about it for the first several times you're using it?
At first, the first couple times, yeah, and then it just became normal.
Yeah, I don't think about this at all, you know. I could just put it on.
Like, I would wear the Whoop up here on my arm, high up, and I literally would forget it was on my body when I was out there. Because you can't be able to see it. So I would just put it somewhere so it wouldn't be able to be seen. It's like one of those things, like, you can't wear, like, a wristband or whatever on your glove hand. Like, it's just extra stuff.
While you're playing.
It's actually less of a, like, a... You're technically not supposed to wear a Whoop because technically they can vibrate. Mine never does. It's just only for an alarm.
To like cheat or something?
I mean, technically it could be used that way, I guess, if it were a hacker. But like they don't have the ability to do that. But like it's one of those things like some umpires are like, hey, take your wedding ring off because you might be scuffing the ball. And the other guy's like, just wear your wedding ring. Like who cares? I literally ran out once. And I was like, oh, crap, my bad. He goes, I don't give a shit. And then he walked away. I was like, all right.
Yeah, what's the state of the hand checks coming off the mound now compared to when they started? Because they look like they've eased up a little bit when you watch them on TV.
Performance.
Yeah, they look like the meme of the security guy just like fake patting someone down as they're about to walk into the stadium. Yeah. That's what they look like now, but are they actually still looking for anything?
Phil Cousy is, definitely.
No, one guy.
He's caught everybody. He's the only guy who's caught anyone.
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
And he's the one that like did it really long with Bumgarner until they got into a big fight.
Really long with Bumgarner, and then he's the one who got Drew Smith last year, and he got Scherzer last year, and he's the first one who got Santiago. He was the first guy, so he was the martyr. Yeah, most guys are like, you're good.
The other guys are like, as long as I can't see it and it's super egregious, like you don't have pine tar all over your friggin' fingers.
There's been other times where some guys on my team came out and they're like, really, man? And he's like, oh, it's just some gum. And he's like, all right. And then he touches it. And then like after the game, they'll be like, hey, manager, let's clean that up. All right. Because that was...
If he does that again, I might.
Yeah, that was one, and I've been told a couple times that like I've asked guys like who is there? Have you caught anybody? They're like, there's like a couple guys that like mentioned the division they're in that are pretty on the. Everyone else is pretty good, fine. Yeah. You know, like whatever. Like you're out there chewing gum, and like there's just crap getting on your. Sometimes guys are it's an accident. Some guys are like, you know, like just trying to get the oil off their hands, and it just feels like more tacky. And then there's some guys you're like, dude. So that's just but they're those are few and far between and
not the way it used to be. I mean, it used to be like
no, yeah, rampant. They were looking, they wanted it, they were excited to catch you.
But also on the youth side, like it was like almost everybody doing it at some point, and then
oh yeah,
now it's probably
it's way less, yeah, way less, yeah. And you get a reputation too. So it's like if you're a closer and like you've run into guys a couple times, they're like I know your hands are the same every time, so. We're good. It's kind of like if you knew a TSA guy who's seen you, like you fly every week or whatever. You're like, hey, what's up, man?
He's like, yeah,
you're probably good.
Yeah, you're probably not taking your shoes off if you know the TSA agent
by
name.
You're
and they
fine.
Recognize
I know you.
You.
Exactly.
Let's talk about bullpens, building an elite bullpen, because we think a lot about closers on this show. We think a lot about getting saves because they matter a lot in most fantasy leagues. There are some leagues that use saves plus holds or saves and holds or some kind of formula or saves are a little more valuable, but holds still matter too. It's a way of opening up the pool, making more relievers a part of the fantasy game. I wanted to start in the ninth inning and work backwards and say, what traits do you want in an actual closer, a capital C closer? If you're going to have someone dedicated to working the ninth inning, what should that pitcher be able to do beyond just being filthy, right? There are more filthy relievers in baseball than there ever have been. But what gives you the extra things you need to be a specialist in that role?
One of my theories is just a big fastball. I think you need a big fastball. And I think it's that you need to be able to just blow by people. I think that's something you want out of your closer. We've seen some guys like Sergio Romo. I always wanted Luke Gregerson to close. And he didn't quite ever really get the chance, maybe once or twice. And I think that the problem with the Sergio Romo, Luke Gregerson types is, first of all, like you might just hang a slider. And when you hang a slider, it's 80 something in the middle of the zone. If you misplace a 99 mile an hour fastball, it's still a 99 mile an hour fastball. You know, like what would I rather throw, an 80 mile an hour cement mixer middle or a 99 mile an hour fastball middle? I think my answer is pretty easy. And so there's been some research that suggests that fastball velocity matters. I think we could probably change it a little bit to fastball stuff plus. If I just look at fastball stuff plus at the top, you know, you got Kopech, Bednar, Mason Miller, Robert Suarez, Ryan Helsley, and then non-closers that maybe, I mean, Tanner Scott's up there. I think that's why he still has a job. And then non-closers that could be on the cusp that have really great fastball stuff plus, Ryan Stanek is right there. Victor Vodnik supposedly has a really good fastball. Chad Green, one of my favorites always. Jason Adam. You know, so these are guys with good fastballs that aren't closing. And I think I would take, you know, an Adam as my closer. I think the Rays are going to do fine while he's closing for them while Fairbanks is out. And, you know, Brian Abreu's on this list. And Chad Green could be a closer for me. And Ryan Stanek could be a closer for me.
I agree with that. I think big fastball. I think it comes down to having an elite pitch. But if that pitch is a fastball, that is the best version. like Mason Miller right now could give one of these every time, and guys will be still missing it. And
you'd be like, I'm throwing the fastball.
I'm throwing the fastball. And frankly, Sergio, there was some time there where he could have just said slider, and guys were just like getting excited, but he just never hung it. And that was like the thing. But like you said, yeah, mistakes are taking advantage, or a little like you can identify that as a mistake and do damage on it, maybe easier than identifying a miss heater. Even though fastballs are hit harder generally, if you have a high swing and miss fastball, you have the ability to be a closer. It's like, it definitely the ability to get a strikeout is going to be your number one thing, because it's a true zero value outcome for a hitter. And if you get into trouble, the chances that you can get out of that trouble without them moving a runner or making anything happen are much higher. So like guys like Edwin Diaz, guys like Josh Hader, though
Static. They don't have command. They might put a guy on or two, but then they'll just strike out the rest. But
they can strike out the way to get out of it. And then it comes down to between the ears, they understand that like they're not in trouble even if they walk a couple guys. And then that's when the guys become elite. So that's what we saw with Edwin, is that he just like I said, he goes 3-0, he's just going to walk. Like, whatever. I'm not going to give a solo homer to you, because I can strike the next three guys out, and he's just not worried about it. And that's made him what he is now. And Hayter's the same way. He's not worried. So it's because they have those things. And I would say that's the biggest point. But I think that firemen are kind of like almost like guys who are the next in line to close. That's why a lot of times you see like a guy who throws a 6th, 7th, and then the closer gets hurt, and then he closes and jumps the 8th inning guy, because the 8th inning guy has like experience but doesn't necessarily have the stuff. I mean, they probably make that case with Presley, which is weird. That's why Hader's closing. It's because they're different stuff. But even though Presley's stuff plus on all of his pitches is great, he doesn't throw 100. That's really what it comes down to.
Little less margin for error in that situation. How many defined roles do you want to have across an entire bullpen unit? I mean, I started thinking about this when the Rays in 2020 had all these funky looks. It was like, well, maybe you just want what Lance Brozdowski put together as a visual. You just want the arms of a clock. You just want every possible arm slot in the bullpen. And yeah, you're going to get varying stuff. Some of those guys throw really hard. It's got Aaron Loop, Josh Fleming, Jose Alvarado, Pete Fairbanks, Aaron Slagers, Ryan Thompson, I think, were the guys kind of featured in this particular group. And it's wild. I mean, you got Loop down at 9 o'clock. You got like Fleming and Alvarado up at 10 and 11, Fairbanks between 12 and 1, Slagers between 1 and 2, and Thompson down there at 3. That's just everything you see as a hitter looks different. So, like, do you think about it in terms of varying up looks? Do you think about it in terms of who's going to be used when? Or do you try to shoot for both of those things? Is it realistic to have your cake and eat it too in this case?
I feel like it's what do you got? Like, who do you have? And I just think that kind of played out. Like, I don't know if they built that on purpose as much as they are like, this is the guys we have to work with, and they all do certain things well. Let's see what we can put together. And then you over-communicate what those guys are expected to do, and that's what the Rays do well. That was I talked extensively with Loop about this. Just, he's like, we knew exactly. Like, he's like, there were series where I just didn't pitch. There was just no lefties to face because I was so good against them. Like, it's just, and we didn't need me. We just didn't need me for series. It's great. I loved it. But then there was times like, you're going to face, like, their best hitters are lefties and they're batting 2-3. Like, you're coming in because they're not going to get pinch hit for. And he's like, all right, well, this is the one where I'm going to pitch 3 days in a row because that's what I need to do. But I know that next series I might not have to. And they know that. I think that ideally you would want, for me anyway, if you had a guy, a closer who established a closer, like you feel like the game's over or close to it when he comes out, having a good closer is there's something, just get bridging to him, the game gets shorter. And when the game gets shorter for maybe a young bullpen, it's a little bit less daunting. Like, we can get to the ninth, but we don't know how we're going to win the game in the 9th inning. That's different than if you have somebody. And then if you can get an 8th inning guy that's pretty much the same thing or has a lot of experience, you know they're going to be solid and they're going to get the same thing every time, the Brian Abreu's and the Presley's, that's ideal. And then pretty much everyone else, if you can just have, like, you know, these guys are the ones if we're closer ahead, and these guys are the ones if we're down by a couple, or like, and then we have the guy who's like the starting pitcher is getting lit up and he needs to throw 3+ innings, you have the long guy's never going to go away. It's getting more and more important now. So like, if the other five guys in the pen can do leverage, and you everyone gets opportunities too. That's what the Rays do too. That I think that benefits you long. Like if you have a bunch of guys who have like 9 holds on the year, everyone's been in put in the position where they had to go get out, so that maybe they weren't expecting to have to go get it. That's when you get the really, really good bullpens operating. So the Rays do that well. The Dodgers do that really well. The Twins do that well.
I wanted to ask you, maybe you've already sort of answered it with the way you were talking about the Rays, but I want to push it even beyond the Rays kind of do this, but I want to push this to like the most bizarre, most like sort of crazy version of this. And so let's say I'm the new GM of your team and I come sit down and you're like, why is the GM in on the bullpen meeting? But I'm like, this is important to me. And I want to tell you, I want buy-in from you guys. So I've come down from, you know, the office to tell you guys, like, we think that we've modeled the batter-pitcher interaction better than anybody has to date. And there are some really interesting things that I've seen research-wise that we're getting really close to understanding how certain swings interact with certain pitches. And so I come down and I say, we think we've really figured this out. And you guys represent the best of the best, the best that we've got to fight each of these different types of swings. And so I'm here to tell you, every single one of you guys is going to get a save this year. Every single one of you guys is going to get a save this year. Maybe none of y'all is going to get more than 10 saves. And we may bring you anywhere in from the 6th to the 10th, you know, maybe the 5th, maybe in the 1st to the 10th. You know, like we are really going to try and game this out so that when you come in, you have something that we think that batter cannot deal with. And we've prepared you for that. And so I just want to get you guys buy-in that like you guys are all going to succeed. You're all going to get some things here, but we may not have someone that comes out of this with 30 saves. Like, you know, and you may be sitting next to, you may have, you sit next to that bullpen phone for 6 innings. You know, what would your reaction be as a reliever?
I would hate that so much. because it's, here's how the psyche of a reliever works, especially if it's a day where you know you're alive or you're not down, which there are certain organizations that just will not tell you you're down. You have to like guess.
That's why I like the active roster thing. Force those guys to put red lights on people. Sometimes I would be so nice for a reliever to just be like, okay, I'm not in tonight. Thank you.
I got a rapport with Jeremy Hefner to the point where I could walk into the clubhouse, he'd just make eye contact with me and I'd go, like, he knew about Whoop and he knew about stuff. So I could be like, hey, I have a red. I could screenshot it, be like, I slept terrible last night and I pitched 3 days in a row. Like, so it would be like, he'd be like, hey, man, let me know how you feel tomorrow because I've thrown twice in a row, right? And maybe the one of them was a little bit longer. And I'll be like, all right, I'll let you, because he knows. I'll be like, I'm good. Let's go for 3 because I'll game. If I need to game, I'll game. And I'll be like, hey, man, I feel terrible today. And I could tell him that first thing in the morning. And he'd be like, all right, cool. I'll communicate that. And that was like something we had. And so you wake up in the morning, your body immediately, like, my brain would immediately go like, I got to pitch tonight.
If I was your GM, if I gave you that speech, you'd feel like every day you wake up on
red alert. I'd be more stressed every day. And then knowing, like, I would go out to the bullpen in the 4th inning, not because, like, I didn't want to be there out there. It was more so, like, separating myself from the game for a little bit gave me 3 innings of, like, I could just stretch. I'm not as nervous, or I'm not as getting as anxious to go in the game or figure it out. And you got to find ways to manage that so that you're kind of putting, you know, this adrenaline into a small window. Because if you're adrenaline the whole time, it's exhausting. Like, even if you're sitting there, you're getting exhausted. And so the more you can limit it, I think that's something they're trying to do. So, like, Sergio Romo is another great example.
That's the value of a role, right?
That's the value of a role. And it doesn't need to be like, this is your inning, though that is helpful. Like, if you're a closer, you know that you're going to be only going into save situations. Like, you get to relax quite often. I loved it. That was really nice. It actually made me better at when I was pitching, because I feel like I was like, oh, this is the time I need to use my energy.
What if I was like, okay, I know you guys are freaking out now, but what you're going to do when you get to the park is your bullpen coach is going to tell you, like, these are your batters.
Yes. So that's an ideal. If you want to do that, that's the way to do it, is to be like, these are your batters. This is your group.
So if they come up in these situations and the score is like this, that's going
to
be your time.
Expect to be the one getting up. And then that way, you're like, you see it coming. You're watching the game. So it keeps you engaged, too, because you're like, here's my situation. And I know that from this inning to this inning, this is kind of my range. Like,
and you can watch those batters, you know, early.
Or are
they
coming up? When are they coming up? It's the sixth inning. They're coming up and it's tied. I'm pitching. Like, and Loop said there was times where he'd be like, oh, but if they come up in the eighth and this guy, like the other, this is the lefty that throws in the eighth. I'm the lefty that throws in the sixth. Like he knew that. But if that lefty in the eighth was down, it was his turn now. It's like, so you can read it pretty easily at that point. You can figure it out. But that communication is important. You can't just say any one of you can pitch anywhere from the third to the ninth every day. That would produce poor results too. But that's like that's the playoffs. So
that's
you go to the playoffs they're like
everyone's stressed during the playoffs.
Exactly. They're, have your cleats on and be down there. They were like, Edwin Diaz, be down there in the third inning. He come down in the fifth, usually, because he's just only closed. And they're like, in the playoffs, though, we want everyone down there. I mean, he's like, you're not going to throw in the first, but like, you might come in base loaded and no one out.
Sixth or seventh.
If we need to punch out the side and you're our guy because you punch out two of every three guys you face all year, we're going to bring you in that situation. That's definitely a Buck move too. So it's like, he was ready though. We knew that. That was communicated, which was the best way to do it. It didn't come up, but it would happen. So like, yeah, it would drive me crazy if they were like, hey, just expect to do this all the time and there's going to be some guesswork involved. But if they're like, we're going to be very clear about when these things are changing, then I'm on board. Then it becomes a role. It just changes all
the time.
Would
it be exhausting for the pitching coach and the bullpen even to do my version of the over-communication every day? Would that still be exhausting for 162 where it's like, you know, could you just tell me that I'm like, even Loop, he's like, I'm the sixth inning lefty. That's a little bit, that's easier. That's like for 162, that's easier. What I'm talking about almost sounds like playoff ball all year a little bit. You know, it's like, it's tonight, it's, you know, you're Pete Alonso, like Pete Alonso threw blah, 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 and it could be the sixth or it could be the seventh or it could be the eighth. That's still pretty intense.
Well, they usually do it series by series. They do it by series. Like, I know the Dodgers do that. Like, so you get your rundown for the whole series. And if anything is adjusted, he just goes, hey, by the way, tonight it might be a little different because of some other extenuating circumstances. Someone came back from the IL or someone got hurt and isn't in the, so you don't have to, like, Otani's out, so you don't need to. You're our Otani guy. He's not there anymore.
Doing it series by series can reduce the amount of communication that we have to do so that we're not like, okay, bullpen meeting today, full hour.
And then after you do it 5, 6, 7 series, then guys just start to be able to predict it. Like, so you walk in back, hey, I'm facing this guy, aren't I? And they're like, yeah.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Picking up on that pattern would help, but keeping that heart rate down, like having those expectations at least sort of baked in, because at least then you can anticipate as it unfolds as opposed to the anxiety you've talked about before when the bullpen phone rings and you really don't know if it's you or not.
Yeah,
that's the situation you want to avoid. You don't want everybody sitting on pins and needles out there for 9 innings or 7 innings. It's just brutal. I can imagine it'd be terrible. Eno said he's into the idea of limited pitchers being available for each game because you'd have the idea. I'm at the park today and I'm actually down. It's day off. Okay, heart rate's down for the whole game. Great. Breathing easy. Are there some unintended consequences of that would make it not work?
One would be like limiting the number of pitches you have just in case. You know, because sometimes shit hits the fan. Like, sometimes you just got to find a way to get through the game. Honestly, the guy in second is helping a lot.
Position player pitches, right?
It would, and there's some teams that are just like, will not do that no matter what. Like, that the white flag will never be thrown out that way. Like, I know the A's hate doing that. They really do. It's they just really, really, really don't want to do
anybody before they throw.
Yes, the whole everyone will pitch before we throw a position player, and that was just the way. I mean, some organizations are like that. That's just like a it's like a thing. It's like a white flag thing that just you can't let seep in. They feel like you can't let it seep into the psyche or whatever. You know, it was a little bit like if we're getting, you know. It's a great day for it. It would really help us out, but maybe that's something that some growth that needs to happen there a little bit. But it would if you only have five guys available. Like it's funny though, they're doing this little bit. Like some organizations are doing this, and everyone knows they'll be like, "These three guys are down."
There are more red light organization, right? There are more.
Well, yeah, yeah.
You have a red light. Tonight, you're down.
We'd go down. I'd be like, "Are you up today? Are you like me and Seth Lugo, for example?" Because we were interchangeable in a lot of ways. So they're like, I'm like, are you down? Well, that means I have all of our collective situations. Yeah. But if we're both up, then it could be either one of us. So like that changes how you prepare a little bit. But like that can be, we do that ourselves. Like, did anyone say anything to you? Did anyone say anything to me? And then if you're one of those organizations that no one says anything to anybody, then you go down and have those conversations and then you know nothing. I can't tell you how many times I've seen guys like wearing their jackets, phone rings, and then like six guys lean forward and go like this with their sweatshirts, like ready to pull them off.
That's bad news, dude.
Yeah, it's and you just see it, the look on their face, like, and I was closing, so I was like, who is it? Like, it's not me. Which it was nice to have that 10 years in that I finally got to be that guy. I was always this guy, and then I got to be the guy who's like, it's not me, it's one of you guys.
I think one unintended consequence might be that you might need to have like two long guys.
Yeah, you might need a little more
long guys. Yeah.
You don't really have long man in here.
If you had one more slot, it would be better.
You have incredible bulk.
I put everything in six groups, and I kind of put the groups that, like, there's high leverage guys, there's middle bridge guys, situational.
I mean, six is more likely than five.
These are all just honestly, labels, but... and you'd have multiples from some group, right? Some teams don't even have the capital C closer. They use a committee, or maybe they've got two firemen, or you could have someone who's great against lefties and is actually good enough against righties to face both. Plenty of those guys exist, but it seems like you'd want to have... ideally, like one from each of these groups and then some overlap in some of these roles. Yeah, I think the incredible bulk pitchers that I called, I don't know if anyone's ever called them that before, but I think those guys are super useful. Like Bryce Wilson's that guy for the Brewers right now. He's starting games because they've got so many injuries. Junis has been that guy in the past, kind of had the opener in front of him and worked a bunch of different ways with the Giants. Now he's being used like a starter. Well, now he's hurt, but Matt Strom's a good example of that. I think in Eno's world, where we have limitations, you would need more bulk options available. Guys that can get six outs pretty comfortably and really not have major problems of being available.
Yeah, because what if your starter gets hurt or your starter leaves? You may have to have some contingency plans, or if a starter gets hurt or goes into extra innings, you unlock an extra pitcher or something.
Keeping your team within arm's reach for a game, that still matters if you're coming in early. And then also not burning out the rest of the bullpen, keeping those guys fresh when you don't have off days is really important. So it's one of those roles that I think people say, oh, it's the last guy in the bullpen. It's still important, still matters, because it has a kind of a cascading effect on other days, even if you don't win that particular day.
I think the hardest thing also would be like teams kind of have A bullpens and B bullpens. This now I'm trotting on. Like, I don't know if you've been in the B side before, but like
I have.
What's that like? So if I have to declare five or six, I have to kind of declare some A's and some B's, because I might lose tonight.
Yeah, a little bit. And that stuff kind of already happens. It's just like kind of unsaid. And you know, like all the players know intuitively.
They're trying to pitch their way onto the A squad.
Exactly. Or guys in the A squad like have struggled recently. I actually tried to have that conversation last year where I was like, I was really struggling with the clock, coming back off the IL. I remember going into Tate's office and saying, hey, I understand that I have the most leverage experience like far and away of anybody in the bullpen. But if I could get like two or three where it's just like I'm throwing in the sixth inning and it's like we're not tied, or like
that
if there
help, yeah.
there's an opportunity of a low leverage outing just to see this work, that would be ideal. And immediately I was thrown in leverage because we were in leverage every time. It was like a one run game every game. JP Sears threw like five innings and 559 pitches and got pulled. We didn't know he was throwing. He was on a five inning that day, and they called down like, "May get up in the sixth." And I was like, what? Like, it was my second time back. And I was like, well, there, the guy goes out of the window. But I also got it because I was like, I looked around. I was like, yeah, like, no one's really throwing very, no one's separating themselves into the leverage guys. So I'm just used to, like, when things weren't going well, we always had like two or three guys who were throwing well, and that they became the leverage guys until I like started to work my way back into that situation. And I just, the first time I was on a team, they, like, there really wasn't many options. Like, everyone's just going to pitch whenever. We were just trying to get there. I got that opportunity again, but it was, sometimes I'm just, you need that. So yeah, that would become a, like, knowing that, oh, I'm the guy who's like, I'm the garbage time guy. But it's an opportunity. You got to see it as an opportunity. If I throw well here, though,
I'm still in the big leagues.
Yeah, I'm still in the big leagues. And it's an opportunity that's very low stress. And if I pitch well, then, you know, now I become another option in higher leverage. And then you pitch well in that time. And then suddenly you're back, you know, doing the eighth inning again. That's just what I did over and over again. So it's helpful, actually, in a little ways, being like, not demoted to AAA, but just being demoted kind of like the, you're not going to get the most important innings yet. But let's give you some opportunities here and see what happens. I think that's help. That's a good way to do, get guys back on the horse, especially guys that are experienced.
I keep looking at this long roll too and thinking maybe that's a better way to get the kinds of reps you would need to become a late bloomer as a starter, because you're working through the lineup more than once. You got to use the arsenal to a greater degree and have more depth.
You're in the big leagues, not pitching against minor leagues.
You didn't have to go to KBO or you didn't have to go to NPB to get those extra reps. So, you know, you didn't have to make that massive life transformation. Yes, you've got the role instability if it goes wrong. But yeah, if you look at it like an opportunity.
Merrill Kelly could have been like a long guy for somebody for a couple of years. Would he have been as good coming back is another question.
I don't know if he would have gotten the opportunity. So that's the thing. They might just be like, you're a great long guy forever. Like, that happens too. They're doing it with Kyle Moeller right now in Oakland. Like, he's throwing really good. He's got a 2-6, throwing long, eating innings. But he's not like, he doesn't need to go take the ball, where if he struggles, it's like so glaring as a starter. He can work through these things a little bit better, because usually he's throwing in a game that's maybe out of hand already, or they're already, you know what I mean? It's not so like, it's not, there's not so much pressure. And I can see that he is, like, his quality of pitches and stuff are getting better and better and better because of the way he's being used. But, like, a guy like Mason Miller, I know they want him to start long-term, but, like, he might become just a closer. Remember they tried this with Chapman for way too long, being a starter?
Yeah, early career Chapman, they thought he was going to be a starter. I don't know how you get there with Mason Miller. Like, I don't know how you come up with a plan physically to get
so.
Him through full seasons to the point where you're like, he's going at least five every time out. It would take 3 or 4 years to do it, no matter how you tried.
I want him to throw 10 pitches every 2 days.
What's he have, like 70 career innings, concluding the minors? He only had 24 innings in the pro ball before he got called to big leagues. And that was because of injuries. So, but he's electric. I think that's pretty clear. I think that maybe we should just say, this is what you do now. You could be this guy for a long time. Let's just let you be an elite closer. Because you need those too.
I put him in our list here. I mean, I put six closers on here. I think he belongs. I think he has that kind of stuff.
I think he does too.
It's the explosive fastball. It's the bats we talked about earlier in the week against the top of the Yankees order. Those were situations where those guys were trying to just get an A swing off on his fastball and they couldn't touch it.
Nowhere close.
It was just, those were stars that looked defenseless. You don't see that. That's a very unusual thing. To have that much on a fastball. You could guess fastball. You could kind of miss the middle of the plate. I think the one against Judge didn't matter.
He's got an elite slider too. Elite slider. So that's all you really need. It's just about being healthy. But yeah, he's getting some 103 fives now. And I mean, he's one of the most athletic people. Like, just strong. And he's huge too. He's my size. But like, way more athletic than me. Like, he can jump out of a gym. So I'm like, just let him eat. Let him go out and eat. So, yeah, they finally got a good closer in Oakland.
We talked a little bit about the role of command and how, like, I think for a starter, it's just more important. You don't want, like, a lot more base runners. Like, you don't want to deal with that. Like, a reliever is like, I'm still one inning. I'm still going to just try to strike everybody out. A starter has to think, like, how do I get through six innings? How do I get through five innings? And so when I look for future closers, I look at Stuff Plus, but I if I'm using fastball Stuff Plus, I flipped it over to the sinkers. You know, Luis Ortiz on the Pirates comes to mind. He reminds me a little bit of Robert Suarez. Not the command's not always there. Abner Uribe on the Brewers. Yency Almonte on the Cubs. These are guys where the command isn't there. You know, even Lucas Ursaig last year. It's a little bit better this year. you know, you slim that arsenal down. You know, Luis Ortiz, you say, okay, you're a two-pitch guy now. You're just sinker slider. Don't throw those other ones. You can't command them as well. You kind of figure out things. You just, and you get that velo boost when you're in short outings, and you say, oh, you know what? You were trying to like nibble around the corner as a starter. Now you're 99. So just throw it down the middle. You know, that's a place that I would shop for future closers. But there are guys where the command, and I think of like, what was it? Henry Rodriguez or something, where the command is so bad, it can't even work as a closer. I don't know. Is there like, is that just an eye test thing? Or is that like, what are you thinking about when I'm saying this?
No, yeah, you're completely right. There's like a range where, like, honestly, a level of effectively wildness is actually helpful because there's so much pressure on the hitter to make something happen because there's no time to, like, you can't make a mistake. So, like, the margin for error is low. So going up and be like, I'm going to get a fastball down and away and it's going to be in the zone. Like, even if that's taken away and the guy throws 100, like, Edwin Diaz is like that. Like, he mails one to the backstop once an outing. Like, the first throw he throws down to the bullpen is literally to the backstop on purpose because it's like, I'm going to do this once and it, fear God.
Get out of the way.
So, like, but he has a calibration thing, or he just airs it out and he's like, all right, now I'm locked in.
Part of it's making or trying to mess up Eric Langille, the bullpen catcher, too, which is funny. Who has to catch him every time? There's two guys down there, and they make Eric do. Eric's the guy who came second, so they make
Did
him
you
do
see
it.
What happened at San Francisco, Trevor? With the lights?
Where they turned him off? Yeah.
Yeah, Camilo Duvall's pitch is in the bullpen warming up to go out. And they put they have this new like reliever montage with the lights and stuff. And the lights go dark and like a spotlight goes on Camilo Duvall as he walks out. But the light went out as Camilo Duvall threw his last warm-up pitch.
Not only that, his last warm-up as hard as he can, too. He's one of those guys.
So he's throwing 99, and the ball comes out of his hand, and then everything goes dark. And everyone's like, is the bullpen catcher dead?
He probably just, like, it just happened so fast that he just caught it. He was like, oh. Yeah. It's natural. He didn't even register the lights turned off. That place is scary. I was told a couple stories about it on the other side because they put a piece of plexiglass because there's the railings like low behind the catcher on the wayside. Yeah, and they have a piece of plexiglass that's like a little bit up, but like people can still like
stand on the other side and like a ball might like whoa.
Well, Acevedo actually hit somebody in the like off the glance off the top of their head, and he didn't like notice, and she just like crumpled, and it was like, you just hit a fan. Like in the head, she was okay, but like he didn't see it. He like asked for another ball because he just like let it sail. So, and everyone else was like, dude, and he just kept pitching. But Edwin throws to the backstop a lot, and he does it to Langille, and he literally let one eat and just hit the plexiglass, and the fans were like, everyone panicked. I mean, it was like it was the bottom of it. Like, it wasn't even close to going over, but like,
oh,
and he just laughed
because
that's what he does. Like, he does it to the catcher, so the catcher panicked, the fans panicked.
Where is that line, though? We're seeing Tanner Scott. I mean, just one last bit that's a little bit kind of fantasy oriented is like, Tanner Scott is really struggling in Florida, and I don't know, he's got kind of lower end command on this scale. Ryan Stanek, which you might see some of, but you're watching these Mariners games, might be, you know, moving towards the ninth. My location plus numbers say that Stanek has worse command than Scott. And so I don't know, is it sometimes just luck? You're just sort of riding the wave, you know,
kinda.
Or does it, you know, or maybe location plus is not capturing the right stuff here. Like maybe it doesn't really have a,
does location plus take into like effect how bad the miss, like how like I don't know,
magnitude,
competitive location or anything? Because
it's mostly a pitch and count adjusted judge of location. So yeah, I guess like the further it gets out, the more blue it gets.
So that's the thing about Stanek is sometimes he misses non-competitively. Like he'll throw a fastball like in the other batter's box up because he's just trying to throw it 100 down and away, and he just yanks it, and it's just a pitch that just doesn't count. A guy who, again, I was keeping monitoring this very closely, Ken Waldachuk was like leading the league last year, and when he was 0-2, like he'd throw three non-competitive pitches, like none of them were close. So he's missing too badly. Even though a ball is a ball, there are better balls than others. And so a guy like Tanner Scott, though, Tanner Scott misses in the zone too much. Yes. So his misses, his location, he's trying to throw a quality pitch and he's missing where he's given up damage. Stanek's throwing a pitch that nobody could hit if they had an
aura. And so it's just like, just give me a new ball. Here we go.
Yeah, just give me a new ball. And so it just kind of is a throwaway, literally. And the count just changes. That's a better, it's better to do, Edwin Diaz does that too. It's better to do that than what Tanner Scott does. It's got to be low risk, but low reward.
Do you like Stanek possibly to be the closer there?
I think so. I don't think Munoz has shown that he's missing it over the plate.
For some reason, his stuff is down a little bit too.
He's throwing the sinker a lot.
He's loving the sinker. It's something's a little strange.
If there's anyone who looks like they're trying to throw hard, it's Andrés Muñoz. That guy is. He's Bobby Ayala-ing every time, falling off the camera. So.
Well, Matt Brash doesn't have great command either. He's coming back, so he could end up at closer.
His stuff just moves so much. Like, I don't even know how you could have good command, frankly. He's got to start it. Like, he throws a wiffle ball. I don't know. That guy's a freak.
It's impossible. Well, we need to go for now. If you got questions for a future episode, send those our way. You can drop them in our Discord. The link for the Discord is in the show description. You can email us, ratesandbarrels@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter. Trevor's at I am Trevor May. Eno's at EnoSaris. I'm at Derek Van Riper. That's going to do it for this episode of Rates and Barrels. We're back with you at 1 o'clock Eastern on Friday.